Turn my music high, 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 high. Yeah.
You don't know what you're doing.
Sure I do.
Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, agents of change, welcome to another episode of Back in the Black. I'm your host, Frank Mosey II, bringing you a very special episode 10 for Black History Month, How Free is Free? Now, you've heard me talk about how free is free and ask the question a couple times before on this show. Today, we're going to talk a little bit more about the How Free is Free project, the release of the audio spoken word piece, How Free is Free, and some upcoming community projects being brought to you live and direct by Jay Bella, our communication coordinator for Empower Studios. Looking forward to this interview, looking forward to the sit down. Hope you enjoy it. Stay tuned for How Free is Free. You don't want to miss it.
So welcome, everyone, and I appreciate you tuning in today during Black History Month. I'm Jennifer, a.k.a. Jay Bella with Empowered Studios. I'm the Outreach and Marketing Director here at Empowered, and today I have the pleasure of introducing and interviewing our very own Mr. Frank Mosley II. He is our CEO and President of Empower Productions, who is also the founder and CEO for the SEED Initiative, or Social Education for Economic Development, and the co-chair for the Reparations Working Group for Coming to the Table, RVA. Let me give you a salute today because you deserve it. So Frank, we all know you're a busy man. So listeners, and I wanna know is how do you do it all? How do you bring all of this to the table while helping and bringing together communities of color? I brought you on today to discuss the first impactful project from the production house, How Free is Free. Without further ado, let's welcome Frank to the table, and thank you so much for doing this and joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me on my own show. I appreciate you taking the time to interview me and talk about me. You know, I don't prefer to do those things, so encouraging me to do that, kudos to you, and thanks everybody for tuning in. Once again, we are diving into an episode of Back in the Black, but it's the Jay Bella takeover. Apparently, we're doing it a little bit different here. So I'm embracing it. I'm enjoying it. I'm feeling good about all the work and the projects that we have going on. And yeah, I stay busy. I do a lot, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
Absolutely. I can agree with that. Watching you work is amazing. You're busy from sun up to sundown. I'm not sure if people really understand how hard you work. So tell our listeners and tell us more about who you are, where you're from, and what led you down this path.
I tried to tell people who I was in the first episode of Back in the Black, the who, what, and how. I am the who that is an aggregator of information, educational and training materials, resources, and investment opportunities for communities of color. I think that's the best way to describe what I do. I'm passionate about creating a social impact in communities of color, and I am very passionate about financial education. I am a certified financial literacy instructor and very adamant about the importance of our people having a better relationship with their money and building long-term wealth. So a lot of who I am is wrapped up into what I do and what I try to do and spend a lot of waking hours doing is building relationships. I think that relationships are our most important commodity and most important currency. So through that and through the resources that are available to us, I think that there are strategic plans. I like to consider myself as a visionary, someone who can look past where we are to where we can be and putting the dots together, putting the steps in place, building the foundation, planting the seed, if you will, and that is fertile soil for those opportunities for economic growth to take hold. Is really what is the crux and the core of my work.
Absolutely. And, you know, I tell you all the time, what you're doing is impressive. And I feel that, you know, we need more foot soldiers out there who think this way so we can all rise up, you know, above together with everything. And the more social impact and awareness that we have, we can all move forward on a positive footnote.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Agents of change. Wake up. We need a call to action.
Plan to action. Black History Month is the perfect time to unveil some of these, you know, impactful projects that we're going to talk about here today. And so tell me something, you know, having all this knowledge, thirst for knowledge and everything that surrounds you, what is something that people seem to misunderstand about you?
Some things or one thing. I think maybe I'm one of those misunderstood all around individuals. I would have to say that my passion is probably what's misunderstood. I can be very matter of fact, as people will say. I can be very direct and very principled. So the things that I believe in and the vision that I see, I am one who believes that if you speak it, if you believe it, if you put effort and work behind it, then you can see those things come to fruition. And because of that approach to life and to business, I think that that sometimes get misunderstood as far as my intentions. But I am someone who I think when you learn more about who I am and kind of where I'm from, which we talked a little bit about in episode 7 and 8 with Martin Montgomery and the members from Herd. You know, we are all individuals with stories to tell. And I think that for me, being able to tell my story gives individuals an opportunity to understand my journey, but also understand why I am on the path that I am on now.
Absolutely. And, you know, when I work with you, your passion shines through everything that you do and your thirst for helping others. You know, I always tell you is like no other. You know, I tell you all the time, you're the hardest working man that I know. And I truly do mean that. You know, you're working endless hours all the time for helping Black, Indigenous and people of color. You know, you're helping communities preserve through so many disadvantaged hardships with everything. And with all that involved, I know that you're into social entrepreneurship. So give me some insight into that.
Right, right. So, you know, it is hard work, but it's the work that needs to be done. And I'm not doing it alone. Fortunately, I have a coalition of individuals who are coming together to provide their resources, to provide their passion as well, to provide their insight and their expertise. We have to do it together. As the old adage says, it takes a village. And what I am working on is building an online community. And in doing that, I feel, you know, the work that I do doesn't feel like work. You know, they say if you do what you love, you never work again.
That's right.
And so I love helping people. I always have. I think that's just been part of my DNA since a child. I love sharing information, sharing what I know. I think that should be done freely. And yet how free is free, right? So
that's right.
I think that, you know, for me, it is my, you know, everybody has their own calling, I think, or has their own journey where they're looking to find their own purpose in life. For me, I think that I've always been on this path to help people and to acquire the knowledge and information because of, you know, my parents and my upbringing and the value system that they placed on education and on knowledge. Knowing that that's one of those things that people can never take from you once you acquire it. That was something powerful within itself, that notion that I had something that couldn't be taken away. I mean, unless you get amnesia, you know, until some type of traumatic situation. But other than that, you know, knowledge is power. And how you wield that power can change the course of your destiny. I like to feel like we are the masters of our own destiny. Every decision that we make every day, every choice that we make alters the course of our destiny, either in an adverse way or in a positive way. If we can make better decisions and have make more informed decisions, I think that we'll have better outcomes. And better outcomes means that you have a better opportunity to live your best life. And at the end of the day, that's all we want to do, right? We want to experience all the joys and freedoms and prosperities that this world has to offer. And why shouldn't we? The color of our skin or our social status or our financial position shouldn't hinder us. There should be opportunities for all, because that's what the founding fathers created this democracy to be realized one day. Obviously, it wasn't at its conception. It hasn't fully been realized now. But as long as we hold that dream and that vision in our heart, I think that we can one day obtain it. So to me, it's very important that I do the work that I do, regardless of the time that it costs me, because I know that helping people at the end of the day is how we uplift ourselves. And if more people can take up that mantle, more people are willing to pick up the torch and share what they know, go into communities of color, work on projects, work on programs, provide support, provide mentorship, we can see a change. And the information that we share to better ourselves for economic development, for long-term wealth building, we can see a change. And I honestly believe that. And so my passion and all of my energy goes towards that vision and seeing that this this coalition that we're putting together and all the resources and the impact that we can make is made.
100%. And the impact together, we can do many things. I mean, the time is now. It's time to stop being on mute. It's time to start doing things with unmuted apologies. Do everything with no regrets. Be unapologetic for being Black in today's America, and social responsibility and working together. You know, we can do everything. A lot of people are so afraid sometimes to share knowledge or give away, you know, free information. And our communities of colors absolutely need that information to strive and move ahead, which leads me to ask you about the seed initiatives and the community projects that you're currently working on, and how our listeners can get involved with seed.
Sure. So, you know, I created the seed initiative out of a necessity. Social education for economic development was something that, you know, I realized for myself and the journey and the path that I was on. There were tools, there were resources, there were skills, there were insight that I needed if I wanted to reach my full potential. And as I started to meet with people, talk to people about what I wanted to do for myself, I realized that these were also pathways that I was opening for others. And so while the door was open, I figured I'd just go ahead and knock it off the hinges. To me, what we need to do is really educate and train ourselves to be more proficient and have a better understanding. But we can't do that without support. We can't do that without mentorship and resources. So one of the things that with social education, what we're doing is creating resources, creating working groups, creating mentorship programs, creating virtual guru programs to provide that support and that those opportunities for access to a higher income through employability training, to access to funding and to wraparound support for small businesses and individuals who want to start their own organization, for individuals who are trying to generate passive forms of income or multiple streams of income, who need to be able to manage their funds, the money that's coming in for long-term wealth building. All of these, for me, were viable solutions for generating the type of income that I needed to live the lifestyle that I wanted to live. And I felt like this could be a blueprint and a model for others, especially with the support system. So what we're doing is we're working with organizations here in Richmond and across the state, trying to consolidate a lot of the resources, whether it's monetary or human, and the training material that is provided. We are creating programs that are virtual, distant learning, if you will, online. And we are also working to partner with organizations who have programs that are kind of on the ground, brick and mortar. So we are looking to facilitate these discussions, but also this training, And on the other side of that, we want to be able to connect those individuals with opportunities for jobs, opportunities for, again, funding to get their business started or the business growing. And we want to be able to teach people how to invest. We are underbanked and we are underinvested as a culture and as a community. So generating multiple streams of income, getting into the game, as Kiva Sturtevant said, if you want to go back to Back in the Black episode number 4, Kiva and I had a really in-depth conversation about investing. There is no wrong time to invest into the market. And there are some strategies. There are some people that you can talk to about building long-term wealth through investing. So for me, it is incumbent, it is important for me to continue to drive this message for economic growth, to continue to put forth plans for economic development, to continue to invite business leaders, business owners, community organizers, community leaders, faith-based leaders. Everyone is welcome at the table. And at this table, we put our resources together and we put our plans together succinctly in a way that all these resources benefit the community and in a holistic form from high school to retirement. We need to be able to, and even at ages younger than that, we need to be able to embrace our community. We need to be able to embrace our culture and we need to understand what freedom is. Because right now we are not free as free could be.
All right. How free is free, right?
How free is free.
And, you know, there's no wrong time to invest in yourself. You had mentioned that, you touched on that a moment ago, and people need to understand that people of color, you know, we're historically disadvantaged. I mean, the data is clear, which is why seed is so important, you know, to tap into these resources. So visit seedshares.org at the end of our message. Frank will be giving all his social media information where you can visit and sign up. So as a business owner, what are the steps that someone would have to take to sign up as a virtual guru?
So if you want to get involved, you go to seedshares.org as Jenny Bella just so eloquently plugged us here. You know, we want you to understand that there are individuals who can benefit from your experience, just donating your time. And so becoming a virtual guru means that you are sharing what you know in a way that tells a story about your experience, but also educates and provides insight on how to overcome obstacles and barriers, things that you would share with your closest family members, things that you would share with your kids because you want them to be successful. Be a part of our virtual guru program. Share what you know. SeedShares.org. That's what the sharing is about. Being able to get this information and present it in a way that resonates with communities and people of color is one of the most impactful things that you can do. Black, white, or brown, we need you all to be down. So please go to seedshares.org. You can sign up there as a virtual guru. You can learn more about the virtual guru program, the virtual mentorship program, or the seed mentorship program that we're working on is going to be featured there soon as well so that you can join and in real time. You know, it's virtual distant learning is all good in COVID, but there are some individuals who are still out there on the front line who are willing to go into some neighborhoods, socially distance, adhering to the standards for social distancing in a group, and provide live in-person mentorship to these individuals who are looking for guidance, looking for information, looking for ways to better their lives. You can make a difference by simply signing up to our virtual guru program. I implore you to share what you know and make a difference.
Absolutely. And, you know, I always tell you social responsibility becomes more than a slogan. If we all join forces together, we can build, you know, and we can rise up together as one. But, you know, it takes one and it takes a village to get the message across. And what you're doing is amazing. So I want to circle it back here to your mother.
I just want to say this. Spider-Man is amazing.
You're a superhero. You're a superhero.
No, I'm human. I bleed just like everyone else. But I just try to do my part. And I feel like if we can all embrace that we all have a role to play, we can all do amazing things. I think that our work speaks for us. And when I say our work, I mean being available, being accessible, being willing to provide the information, provide the support that the people need. That's pretty amazing in itself. And in that case, anybody can be a superhero.
Absolutely. 100%. It's just taking that step forward and wanting to do it and getting it done. So visit seedshares.org, get involved today. We thank you, Frank, for your contribution to the community and just everything that you're doing every day, because this is a everyday thing for you. This isn't you work one day and you're off one day. I know for a fact that you're working on this, 7 days a week, kind of thing. So, I think that's important that people understand that this is what you breathe in and out on a daily basis. This isn't part-time for you. This is full-time, and this is going to, always be this way. So I think that is important.
So, facts. Yeah.
Facts. Absolutely. Yeah,
that's all I can say. That's, that is my life. And in a nutshell, that's my work week, 7 days.
Yeah.
And sometimes it takes that much effort to move a mountain, which is why I'm glad we have, the support of these community leaders and businesses that already are helping us with this Herculean effort.
Absolutely. Which brings me to more of a personal note for you. You wrote an epilogue. Your mother, Rita Mosley, shout out to Rita, is a book author. And you wrote a beautiful epilogue in your mother's book called No School, which is one of her books, which I found to be an incredibly intriguing story. Once I read it, the personal details that you outlined, for others to read. And I want to know, where did you find the courage to write such a personal story?
Yeah. Definitely shout out to my mom, Rita Mosley. And, that book, No School, was her first book project. And you can find it on Amazon.com. She has a new book out right now, Silence Broken. You can also catch that at IamRitaMosley.com, IamRitaOdaMosley.com. So please support her. She's got some stories to tell. For me, it was an honor and a privilege. I was asked to contribute to that book project. I didn't know at that point in my life, this was written several years ago, where or if my passion for writing would take me. So I thought that this would be a good kind of shot in the dark to see how it would land and hit individuals who, could tell me if this was a story that could motivate people or inspire people to be better. And so I started writing it just because I feel like my writing style is just writing about how I feel. My writing is a reflection of who I am, just like my work is a reflection of who I am. And that story talking about, being bullied and the resilience that I had to learn at a very young age, the grace that my mother showed in handling that situation, and the love and the care that she took in making sure that I was able to live a happy childhood. I think that we all have, like I said, a story to tell. And my story, that particular story, in some way shaped who I was for years to come, because I knew then that I had to develop a tougher skin, that words couldn't break me and shouldn't move me to a point where I'm making irrational or reactive actions or decisions based on it. It taught me how to stand up for myself and to stand up for others. And so I think through my life and my personal experience growing up in a low income community in a small rural town that was pretty much dominated by a college who purchased most of the land for a university and not directly providing resources for the community. And still to this day, my hometown is still facing those very same challenges. I think that you have to be strong. I am a survivor in every sense of the word. And I think that we are all in some way surviving, trying to figure out how to thrive, trying to figure out how to live our best life. And your life experiences, the adversities that you overcome sometimes at a young age allows you to build up the mental fortitude and the willpower that you know. Some people break and crumble under pressure, and other people rise to the occasion.
Right.
I think that we all have the potential to rise, but we have to believe in ourselves. We have to understand that we are our greatest assets. And I think that that was one thing that, in writing that story, I realized that there was a value within myself that I hadn't recognized before. And so finding the courage to talk about my past in some of those more uncomfortable or revealing moments is just about finding the courage to be comfortable with who I am, my own truth. I tell people that I only know how to be one person, and that's me, you know, Frank Mosley II. I couldn't try to be anybody else. I mean, I couldn't be anybody else if I tried.
Right. You're one and only, one and only. There can only be one.
I'm a one to one, you know, and I'm good with that. You know, some people may not be, but I'm good with that. And so it's for me, it's like I said, it's, you know, finding the courage to talk about your stories. I mean, to talk about your life experiences, to talk about how your political views, your spiritual views, to stand in your own truth, as they say, is a courageous thing within itself. And so for me to be able to be a part of that club, those individuals who have influenced me or inspired me to do just that, including my mother, who tells some very personal stories herself about her experiences through her writing. I think that is important, that people understand your experiences in life and how they shape your perspective on life now.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. You know, we all have to look at ourselves in the mirror and look at the person, you know, that's looking back, you know, and you have a choice with some things and what your impact is going to be, or what story are you going to share with the world, with mm-hmm. your children, with your family, you know, how are we going to break these generational curses that we have been fixed with? And are you going to make a change? So I think that, you know, working together collectively, we can do this. And speaking to your mother's writing skills as a book author, I don't know if people understand about you. You know, you do a lot of writing. There's a lot of writing, you know, that you do, a lot of, you know, unpublished writing that you work on because that's a passion of yours, you know, that you like to do, which leads me to How Free is Free, which is a good piece, you know, to release and for people to get a taste of the type of writing and your thought process and how you feel. So when it comes to How Free is Free and your philosophy on that, how did you come up with How Free is Free and just the type of writing and the approach that you did with this piece?
Mm. Yeah, so How Free is Free is a special piece. As you mentioned, I do have some other projects, some other things that I've written that have been published, a couple of things that have been. But I think that it's interesting. I never realized that I was a writer until I was a writer. You know, I had the ability, I think, and even the talent probably at a younger age and never really explored it, right? I never envisioned myself as being a writer. Like, you know, I don't want to write. Mm-hmm. It sounds boring. You know, I want to go outside. I want to have fun. You know, I don't want to sit down and behind the desk with a pen and a pad. But, you know, I was very passionate about music as well. And so I think music was a way for me to get into writing in a way that opened my creative juices, my creative spirit, if you will, to start forming stories through words. And I think that is what my mom had been doing through her writing. And that inspired me as well. It's like, oh, wow, well, you know, maybe we can write. You know, we all do have a story to tell. And I grew up with a very imaginative mind. My sister is 8 years older than I am. And so at times I felt like an only child. And my escape was my imagination. And I think I started off writing these fictional tales that were a reflection of life, and then started getting into more technical writing, you know, business plans and strategic plans and things of that nature. And as I started working with, you know, reparations and expressing my thoughts and my position on that matter, I realized that there were things that I needed to say that I could articulate in words. And it was actually right around the time of the last year when the George Floyd lynching took place, the Breonna Taylor murder had taken place. The Black Lives Matter protest was starting to really bubble over, and COVID started to impact us, communities of brown and black. And I was overwhelmed with emotions. Some of it was frustration. Some of it was anger. Some of it was despair, but never discouragement, because I know that change isn't easy and change isn't always pretty.
Facts.
If you look at the history of this country, right? If you look at the history of this country, no change has come without some type of war, without some type of bloodshed, without some type of violence. It is, what do you call it, an unpleasant truth.
Absolutely.
About this country.
Yes.
But it is a truth nonetheless. And you saw an attempt for an insurrection because they wanted change. You know, it's part of, unfortunately, this society's coping mechanism for dealing with differences of opinions or political views. We result to our lowest common denominator, our most primal instincts, which is violence, whether it's black on black crime or blue on black crime, or blue on black killings, rather. Whether it's black on black killings or blue on black killings, we are in a society where violence is championed. And the first instinct is not to communicate and talk about what's bothering us, but to result to some type of physical recourse or action that usually has some type of consequence behind it. How free is free was a question that was posed during a period of time where I had to understand what freedom really was. I was struggling with trying to wrap my head around the inequality, the systemic racism that not only existed, but now was showing itself in such boldness as they did in Charlottesville. You have Klansmen walking around without their hoods on, but still chanting anti-Semitic remarks. You have someone who lost their life because they believed that black people should have equal rights. That touched me in a way that, in a visceral way, that left me wondering and asking the question, how free is free for someone who looks like me? For someone who has grown up in a neighborhood like the one that I grew up in, with the limited opportunities that I've had, someone who had to survive the war on drugs, someone who was a descendant of slaves, a descendant of individuals who have struggled to make ends meet for their entire existence.
Right.
This was something that was a question that I needed to ask America. You know, when you talk about freedom, are you talking to me? Are you talking about me? Because I gotta ask, with the price that I've paid, the price that our people have paid, how much more do we have to pay in order to be free? To have the same freedoms that you enjoy every day? I mean, in what universe, because definitely not this one, can a group of 100,000 people of color storm the nation's capital
and create an
insurrection, and only one person is shot and killed. Where the National Guard is called in, and the protesters, these insurrectionists, some of them who committed federal and criminal offenses, acts of treason, were able to cordially leave, like they had just visited the fair, and then they could go home with the cotton candy. Mm-hmm. When I look at these things happening, I have to ask white America, how free is free? How free is free? And so what the philosophy that went behind the writing of this was, out of the 400 years, the truth of our history has never been told. Not in a way that ties all of the experiences and atrocities that we have faced to our economic position. Where we are is not because we are lazy, because we were unwilling or incapable or unable to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps to do for ourselves, to build a black economy, to build a black Wall Street.
Right.
That notion that we were inferior, that our education should be limited to that of a warehouse worker or a manufacturer worker and not of a doctor or lawyer or entrepreneur, that our education system is, public education system is intentionally designed to limit us from being able to reach our full potential. All of these things over the last past 400 years have led us to this moment in time. And again, without change, without discourse, without disruption of the way that things are, without challenging the status quo, we will never see change. Without policy, we will never see change.
Right.
Without standing together, we will never see change. We will never see freedom. And so this piece was a call to action. This was letting people know that we understand the truth of our history, that we are still here despite all that you have put us through. We ain't going back to Africa unless we want to go back to Africa. And when we go back to Africa, it's to join with our African brothers and sisters and rebuild our global economy, right? That consists of us trading and selling goods in a way that benefits people of color here in this country. This notion that we are not part of this American experiment, when this, as Malcolm X once said, we didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us.
Right.
Indigenous people were already here. We were already here. Christopher Columbus didn't find us. He didn't find a new America. America was already occupied.
Mm-hmm.
And many of us who were here before us, that are mixed with those that in indigenous blood, married or mated with African slaves, we are all one. We are all one. And so black, brown, we have to understand the power that we have when we unify. Black, brown, and white, we have to understand the power that we have to create change when we unify. And how free is free is a call to action. And Black History Month, I couldn't think of any better month to talk about how we need to celebrate Black history every single day, because we make Black history every single day.
Exactly. And I'm with you on that. And speaking of call to action, and without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, the world premiere of How Free is Free.
How free is free? Pardon, did I wake you? I know you were sleeping comfortably, but there's this unpleasant conversation that you've needed to have with me. You've been avoiding it for centuries, but now let's speak truthfully. There's this question I've been dying to ask you. How free is free? You see that word free? It doesn't mean the same for you as it does for me. Apparently, you and I have very different definitions how that word applies to me. Is it history or history that you relied on for so long that kept you so blind you couldn't see? Systematic racism and bigotry in the land of the free. Not even that word slave means the same to you as to me. You see, our slaves were prisoners of war who could marry, own land, one day be a part of our community, not to be subjected to untold acts of violence and savagery. How free is free? But from the tombs to the wombs of West Africa you would raid, I was captured, bonded, sold, and enslaved. Shipped like livestock through a transatlantic trade. Stripped of my culture, my dignity, and told how to behave. How free is free? When your founding forefathers were slave owners to me. So was the Constitution written to declare liberty or to preserve slavery? Let's speak truthfully. When it was drafted, it was by men who didn't look like me.
inscribed with words like all men are created equal with inalienable rights, except for men who look like me. Coded language courtesy of Edmund Pendleton I had to be blind not to see. Only when they enter into a state of society, that condition was meant for me. Deemed 3/5 of a man, nothing more than livestock on trading blocks. Hey, run your fingers through his mouth so we know he's of a good stock. Blacks birth capitalism, Wall Street was built just for people like me. But you were brokers and we were living stock to be traded more efficiently. How many slaves does it take to build the world's richest economy? Only 4 million, that's not including the ones left hanging from a tree. How free is free when I try to run away to escape this misery? How far can I get with dogs and slave catchers in pursuit of me? If I stay, do I die and never know free? Or do I run, cause I'd rather be dead than not be? When caught, I know with no uncertainty there'll be a noose awaiting me, or flesh stripped from a bull's whip to repay your pain and injury. It seemed with great pride you devised horrific ways to punish me. My flesh burned, peeled, pickled, hung in store windows like prize trophies. How free is free? You said that you would emancipate me, abolish slavery, that I too would be free, equal like you to safely enter into society. Was greed all that you could see? How much money could be made off the backs of black faces that look like me? Or was it that ill-informed judgment that was passed on so easily? An inferior creature magnified through those rose-tinted eyes of white supremacy. How free is free when cotton and slaves are both your chief commodity? How is it godly to fight a war over the rights to own human beings as property? What a mockery. Even after the war was won, we weren't all freed. Not until 1865, that historic date on June 19th. How free is free when you reneged on Reconstruction, 40 acres and one mule that was owed to me? With a pen stroke, it was revoked, a rewrite of history. So is this what you do with your newfound liberty? How different this world would be if you kept that one promise to me. Instead, you gave me Black Code and Jim Crow, Plessy versus Ferguson, separate but equal, whites-only bathrooms, segregation, discrimination, closed down our schools, stifled our education. I asked you for justice and equal protection to right what was wrong. Despite that, I pulled myself up by my bootstraps and was finally growing strong. Doctors, lawyers, entrepreneurs, politicians, teachers, and so on. Until that fateful day that your Klan came along. 1,000 businesses and homes, 35 blocks burned by planes bombed. The promise of a better tomorrow, demolished, gone. My feet are still steeped in rivers of blood, I wade knee deep. Massacres murdered, hundreds of children, babies, mothers still weep. 10,000 left homeless when you destroyed our Black Wall Street. Children's lost from the promises of peace you repeatedly failed to keep. Wasn't the first or the last, 20 more yet to come, hundreds more before you're done. Riots, looting, shootings. Is there any doubt where we learned it from? You erected statues of Confederates and Klansmen, traitors to the states. Gave racist slave patrols badges and guns to remind me of my place. I came to you with sit-ins, peaceful marches and protests. You greeted me with dogs and water hoses, police license to beat us to near death. Voting rights, the war on drugs, mass incarceration, you degraded my civil liberties. And now a pandemic where primarily black and brown are the highest casualties. How free is free? Was still branded with the N-word that your forefathers seared into me, when brainwashed and programmed to see what you want me to be. How ironic it is to me that even when some persist to insist that I am so ugly, you've never been able to resist my skin's naturally sun-kissed beauty. How free is free? When held in police custody and handcuffed by those who are supposed to serve and protect me. So why is my life now in sudden jeopardy? When my last words are, I can't breathe, and you continue to apply pressure to my neck with your knee? Quite the appropriate analogy for what this country has done to me. No, I think strong and resilient are words better suited for me, and there is no better word than survivor to define one who has endured as much as we. Is it simply my black face that strikes fear when it's seen? Or is this air of royalty radiating from me, passed down from kings and queens? Is it my swag, this undying sense of confidence that I have, knowing that given an opportunity, there's no height I won't surpass? Or because of high jump, any challenge in my path? Sports, business, entertainment, medicine, and then President Obama at last. Was it really all so bad? What'd you think? We'd really paint the White House black? Join with Native Americans and Mexicans and take their country back? You thought we would put you in chains, change your religions and your names, rape your women, then separate you from your children because you did the same? Peddlers of fear tell you what they want you to hear. Distort and confuse, lie and call the news till my truth disappears. How many more years? You've taken more than I've had to give. Paid in blood, sweat, and tears with only one request. Let me live. Let me be. Welcome in a society where black, brown, and whites are all truly equal brothers and sisters that together live free. Wake up, America. I need you to look with open eyes and clearly see that noise coming from the streets. It's me, the voice of 400 years of slavery. I was reborn, formed in a perfect storm, birthed by idle chatter, raised by a movement, a mosaic of racist, indefinite chorus, all screaming, Black Lives Matter.
Matter.
So I'll ask you once again, America, and this time answer me honestly. The price I've paid, how free is free?
Frank, that's magnificent. And legendary. Okay. Never heard a piece like this. You know that I've listened to this 3 and 4 times, and I can listen to it over and over, and I can't get enough of it. It's like an anthem, you know, that should be heard by all. And some of the lines are really impactful, and some of these lines are going to resonate with people in a certain way. You did it so seamlessly. You did it like it was just like in your blood, you know, to do it. It's not even force. It's what you do, who you are. It just exudes from you. And I'm definitely proud of you for even creating such a piece. I will definitely say it's one of my my favorites pieces that you have thus far. So I will tell you that. And some of the lines that really stood out to me, you know, I'd like to share with some of the listeners. Maybe you can give some feedback on some of them. And one of the lines reads, "It is simply my black face that strikes fear when it's seen." And that, to me, is powerful, just said alone. When you wrote that piece, what was on your mind when you put that in?
Yeah. You know, there are conversations that are being had right now with organizations like the one that I'm in coming to the table, just about the racial biases that take place, the misunderstanding of our two cultures, white and black specifically. And I think that racism is about ignorance and spreading fear. The idea that a person is intimidated by you because of your stature, because of the color of your skin. And I think back to the origins of slavery and some of the tactics that were used against some of the bigger and stronger slaves, the Mandingos, the Mandinkas, if you will, the warriors that they needed to break in order for individuals to stay in line, to keep the rest of the tribe or the rest of the people on the plantation in line, the rest of the slaves on the plantation in line. When I think about the murders that have taken place because a black man has walked by a white woman and brushed across her umbrella and exchanged words, and now they're being hunted or lynched and murdered because of the fear. I think about walking by someone who clutches their purse or grabs their child and pulls them closer because a black man is in their area, in their vicinity.
Mm-hmm.
I think about the doors locking when you walk by a car. People who don't want to get out of their vehicle until you leave the parking lot. Fear of a notion that because of my skin color, because of the way that I dress, my vernacular, the way that I talk, my swag, that somehow threatens you in such a visceral way. You know, it led me to the question, is it simply my black face?
Mm-hmm.
It strikes fear when it's seen. I mean, is that all it is?
Right. That's it.
Or is
one
it something
look.
Deeper than that? Is it this air of royalty, this sense of black pride that I have because I know where I'm from? I know that I am the descendant of kings and queens, not of slaves. And so, yeah, I think that line for me, it said a lot with just a few words.
Absolutely. And in the resources, you know, the color of your skin locks you out of resources, locks you out mm-hmm. of education, you know, opportunity, joy, you know, even for some people. And I think that's a great line, which, you know, you speak about kings and queens, which leads me to my next one that was impactful when you said, Or is it the air of royalty radiating from me, passed down from the kings and the queens? You know, I like that one. That's a favorite. That's important. That's put in there. So even when, as adults or even younger children that are listening to this, they understand where they're from, or it sparks conversation, you know, in that sense. So that's an important one. And one I wanted to say for last, which, you know, applies to a lot of things that has happened here recently with our communities. And it reads, when my last words are, I can't breathe, yet you continue to apply pressure to my neck with your knee. Quite the appropriate analogy for what this country has done to me. Now, that is deep, and that will resonate with so many people. When you put that in there, what was on your mind specifically when you wrote that?
George Floyd, rest in power. I was appalled, as many were, but not surprised, as some were. And so it was hard for me. It's hard for me anytime I watch the senseless murder of an African-American man, an African-American child, an African-American woman. The loss of life in such a senseless way is always saddening to me. It's equally saddening that as we are focusing on the lives of Blacks and Browns, that we are not focusing on protecting the lives of Black and Brown within our own community by the senseless killings that we have when we are aiming the guns at each other. I think for me, that point in time was a moment that was a watershed moment. Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. It's a watershed moment for me, because as the Black Lives Matter movement and protests was building up steam, I thought about how, and maybe Reverend Al Sharpton had said something about get your knee off of our neck, I think was the way he put it. And I thought that was kind of how we felt, right? Like this country has had its knee on our neck, just like that officer had its knee on George Floyd's neck, simply because he was a Black man and he could. The notion that systemic racism doesn't exist and that there are not oppressive forces that keep us from rising and reaching our full potential is a faux notion. Mm-hmm. It's a lie, smoke and mirrors. And so I don't get sidetracked or distracted by talking heads who try to convince me otherwise when the evidence is right there in front of you.
That's right. Right in front of your face, everybody. How free is free? And don't sleep on this. It's something that everybody needs to hear. You need to pass it along to your friends, your family, your children. And I guarantee you, something will resonate with you. It has such a social impact. And thank you for sharing that. And speaking of impact, I'd like to know a little bit more about some of the things that you may have experienced, you know, as a Black man. If you could share with us today a moment in time where you felt disadvantaged and what you were feeling at the moment and how some of your tools may have helped you at the time, if they were something you could connect with.
Well, I don't think that there are many moments in my life where I hadn't felt disadvantaged, whether it was seeking employment and my resume or my background, my criminal background was a barrier, whether it was trying to start a business and trying to find the funding and going to potentially white investors for help, for support, for funding, and being question as to how someone like myself would be capable of putting something as inspirational as the SEED Initiative, or as ambitious, I should say, as the SEED Initiative, or any of the financial literacy program that I had for high schools. You know, it's you know, when you say disadvantaged, you have to look at who has the advantage, right? It's just like basketball, who's winning, who's losing, and who's playing by the rules and who's not. Sometimes, if you know the game well enough inside and out, you can pull on the jersey of the player when he's trying to get around the screen. I'm talking basketball terms for those who don't get it, but football as well, right? You can hang on to the jersey when the ref's not looking. You can step on a player's toe so they can't catch a pass. There's just little things that you can do. You can nudge a player while he's trying to catch a long reception. Sometimes you get caught for pass interference, sometimes you don't. The thing is that we don't take enough time to understand the rules to the game.
That's right.
And in doing that, a lot of times we lose. And sometimes we don't understand that the game is a little tilted in their favor. So if we don't understand the game, we don't understand the rules to the game, we're going to be disadvantaged. And if no one ever teaches you the rules to the game, then you're always going to be at a disadvantage. So how do we get back in the black, right? How do we level the playing field? We do that through sharing information. We do that by learning the rules to the game. We do that by playing as a team, on the same team, for the same goal, for the win. And I think that for me, the only disadvantage that I currently have, the disadvantage that I allow myself to see, there is no limit to the potential of what we can do together. And in that, and then from that perspective, I feel like we have the best advantage possible. From that perspective, I feel like we have the best advantage possible in this game to win.
Absolutely. And with the movement and coalition that you're creating, it will win. And that's what's most important, which leads to collaborative economics, which, you know, I'd like to ask you about and what you feel is most important, or, you know, the most important takeaway about that.
Right. Yeah. So everything that we do, everything that we talk about as far as coalition building, as far as social education for economic development, all of that revolves around our ability to pool our monetary and human resources together collectively and collaboratively in a way that produces social impact and long-term wealth building. I think that when people see collective economics, sometimes they don't recognize it. It may be something as simple as, okay, well, we all want to go and take a cruise. Well, let's all put our dollars together so that we have enough money to purchase this cruise trip. And then when we get there, let's all go in on a hotel so that the price goes down. All these things that are small examples, right, of collective economics. Building a business together, growing a network together, investing together. There are investment groups. There are individuals who just join together and put their money in a pool and then look to have that money create a return on their investment that allows them to generate passive forms of income. The money is working for you instead of you working for your money. So understanding collective economics, understanding economic development, how we can build things together, how we can own things together, manufacture things together, and support each other, Black-owned, Black-bought. You know, I think about what's coming down the pipeline with the legalization of adult-use marijuana, the cannabis bill. We think about, oh, we can open up dispensaries. We can open up grow farms. And that's kind of the low-hanging fruit, as they say. When we can also be focusing on manufacturing byproducts from hemp, things that we can build and create ourselves and sell and own as manufacturers, as investors. We have to start thinking like investors and start thinking like consumers. And this is a time that we can do that. This is, like I said, this is Black History Month.
Yay, yay.
I want everybody to take the time to see what they can do in their own personal life, with their business, with their organization, whatever part of the movement that you can take hold of. The economic growth movement for communities of color is something I want you to embrace right now in Black History Month, and find ways that you can make history, your own personal history, your own personal legacy, your own personal story to tell. And I challenge you all to continue to be the agents of change, to continue to participate on the front line of this battle, to understand that failure is not an option, and that, in the immortal words of Martin Luther King, we shall overcome.
So, Frank, tell me, who are the three people who have been the most influential people in your life for this movement and everything that you're about?
In my life, wow. I think just as a writer and for this project and kind of for this movement, I think the three most influential people would have to be Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, and James Baldwin. Three brilliant minds, three inspiring auditors, and three visionaries who could see through all of the minutia and get right to the heart of the matter. So I think that those are three that definitely come to mind.
Okay. All right. Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, we're going to move on to a lighter note. You know, I'm sure people want to know more information about you, a little bit more personal information. So if you could just, you know, answer these as candid as possible.
Yeah. All right, let's have at it.
All right, yeah, it's light. It's light. It's really light.
Let's,
you know,
have
don't.
At it. Let's,
no,
let's,
are you afraid? Is Frank afraid? What's happening here?
No fear here. It's just, you know, it's very rare that my personal persona is revealed, especially on Back in the Black, you know. But I'm all for it. Let's ride.
All right, so here we go. So I'm just gonna say two different things, and you tell me which one relates to you more.
Okay.
All right. So let's go with butter pecan ice cream or chocolate ice cream.
Butter pecan.
Are you a kettle corn kind of guy or do you like butter popcorn?
Kettle corn. I would have to go with the butter.
Okay. I like kettle. So I don't know. You know, I think a lot of people would agree with me on the kettle. But so what about camping or hotel?
Definitely hotel.
Okay. All right. Road trip or staying local?
Road trip.
All right. Yay, yay. All right. We can agree on that one. All right. Fishing or sports?
Sports. Yeah. Yeah. This fishing is a sport.
Sports as in basketball.
Leisure sport.
And, yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't want anybody who's listening to broadcast like, hey, wait a minute, fishing. Yeah. Competitions and everything.
Hey, you never know who your listeners are. You don't know who your listeners are. Somebody would, you know, so.
Exactly. I don't want to offend any professional fishermen out there. So no, I definitely am a basketball fan. Go Celtics.
All right. Hey, hey. All right. So what about playing in the snow or sitting in front of a fireplace?
That's a tough one. I guess if I am alone, playing in the snow. But if I have the opportunity to have some company, I would hope that we'd have more of a pleasant experience, especially in this weather, if we're in front of a fireplace.
So you can't warm up alone?
It's hard. I don't weigh that much. I don't have a lot of insulation. I have to get goosed down, you know.
Right. All right. So steak or shrimp?
Shrimp.
Marvel movie or horror movie?
Oh, Marvel action or horror. You know, they don't make horror movies like they used to, so I would have to say Marvel.
All right. Cornbread or cocoa bread?
Ooh, now that's a tough one. Ah, you are. Wow.
Yeah.
Cornbread or, see, that's either my soul food side or it's my Caribbean side. It just depends on what I'm eating. I would have to say at this point, maybe because I haven't had any Jamaican food in a couple of weeks, let's say cocoa bread.
Okay. All right. I can feel you. I love cocoa bread too. Nice, soft, fresh cocoa bread, you know, with some oxtails, you know. Yeah.
Stop it. I'm already drooling just thinking about it.
In front of the fireplace, you know.
In this weather would be
nice.
Yeah,
what?
It would be nice.
With some butter pecan ice cream, you know. All right, back on track. So bananas or mango?
Bananas.
All right. And my final and last one, roller coaster or bungee jump?
Oh, I've never bungee jumped. if I would say roller coaster only because I've never bungee jumped. However, if my heart can hold up to it, I would still to this day bungee jump. I think that looks like a really fun experience to have.
Absolutely. I probably have to do the roller coaster bungee jump. I'm afraid just my luck, the cord might snap and right. I won't be able to do any more podcasts and help out here. So, you know, I'm going to stay away from that.
You know, that's my thoughts on it too. It's just that 1% chance that it might break and it just might happen when I'm the one that's jumping.
Right.
So no, I haven't tried it yet, but, you know, who knows what the future may bring.
That's right. That's right. And tell me one thing that, you know, our listeners, you know, might find a little useful about you when they're reading about, you know, all of your initiatives and your movement, something we don't know, something I don't know. I don't know. Tell us something unique.
Here is something unique that a lot of people probably wouldn't know or guess just by having conversations with me. My writing and sometimes other things are heavily influenced by Japanese anime. I love the culture. I love the creativity. I love the artistic display of representation. I should say I love the artistic representation of the culture. And I love being inspired by people who can imagine beyond what they see and what this world could be. They have a lot of ideas about technology and future tech that really inspires me as well. So, yeah, I would say that would be the one thing that a lot of people don't know about me is my undying love and passion for anime.
That's a fun fact for sure. Thank you for sharing that and opening up a little. As you said, you're not always sharing the personal side. A lot of people always just hear about the business and your movements. But I think it's important that people, you know, really understand who you are at the core. It helps a lot. Now that we're at the end of this beautiful podcast, I'd like to know, and I want you to share with others where they can find you on social media. Where can they access Frank and your movements and Seed and How Free is Free and all the other good stuff?
Well, as you know, you can always find me on backinthebLK.com. That is the where the economic growth movement begins and ends as far as the message is concerned. You can always find me on backinthebLK.com for more episodes of Back in the Black, the podcast. Also, follow me on all social media platforms at BackinTheBLK. Seed Initiative, you can always check us out online at seedshares.org or at Seed for All on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. Listen, you got to tune into Empowered Studios, empoweredstudios.com. Jay Bella is going to be there reaching out to the community, reaching out to talent and artists. We got a lot of projects that are already in the way of being either produced or being seen by producers. So stay tuned. How Free is Free is just the tip of the iceberg. You can find out more about How Free is Free on empoweredstudios.com and follow us at hashtag HFIF. Follow us on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We're going to be announcing release dates for more projects as well as merchandise. You can go ahead and start pre-ordering now for some of the t-shirts for some of these projects that we have out, including the How Free is Free project. So stay tuned for more to come.
That's right. That's right. Stay tuned. And thank you very much, Frank, for sharing everything about your doing and the movements. And everybody, check it out. There's going to be pre-orders. Check out the merch. We're going to have some beautiful things that are going to be offered on Empowered. And, you know, I'd like to thank our guests for their time. And, you know, we appreciate you listening in today. Once again, it's Jay Bella signing off into the light until we connect again.
Thanks, Jay Bella. I appreciate you doing this interview. Everybody, Ages of Change, once again, tune in to a new episode of Back in the Black next Saturday, episode 11. We're going to have a very special guest on then, too. So look forward to you all being bold, being innovative, being empowered. Let's get back in the black. Let's do it together. See you next week.